Welcome to the Hobby of a Lifestyle podcast, a show that looks at how our passions impact lives and drive career choices. I'm Andy Gray, a former national and world champion kickboxer. During my shows, I'll be talking with athletes, coaches, fans and more as I delve into their world to find out what inspired them on their journey. Welcome to Hobby of a Lifestyle. Thanks for joining me. This week I'm joined by the two-time USA national champion, world championship finalist and Nike athlete Katie Najot. Katie talks open and honestly about her journey to being the best in her country and her aspirations moving forward. Let's find out the whole story. Welcome, Katie, to Hobby of a Lifestyle. Thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Thank you for having me.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm really good. Thank you very much. I'm really grateful that you got back in touch with me when I reached out on social media, and I'm really happy to have you on the show today.
Of course. I really like getting to tell my story. Pole vault's not a sport that a lot of people know much about, so I like getting to share.
You just answered the question I was just going to say. Can you just tell listeners exactly what your hobby, profession, and passion is? But you've said that pole vaulting. You're right. Yes. I don't know anybody who pole vaults, because it's just not, certainly here in the UK, it is just not something that we do in school.
Yep. So yeah, I mean, UK, it's definitely a little different. The US, it has become bigger, but it was still really new even when I started it for girls. So
okay, so let's go back to the very beginning, because as we just said, you know, it was very new to you when you were a young girl. How did you even get into pole vault? Was there other hobbies before that, and how old were you?
So I was 12 years old. For us, that's junior high, and that was the first year that you're able to do sports for your school. At least in my school system, that's how it worked. Before that, it was just local club teams, the church leagues and stuff like that. So I went out for track and field, and one of the first practices, they took the middle school team over to the high school track, and I saw the high schoolers doing it and just said, I have to try that. I was a gymnast when I was younger, and I liked anything involving adrenaline and body strength. And so it was just kind of the perfect kind of sport for me. And so I begged my coaches for days to let me go try, but they didn't really know anything about the pole vault. So I think they were kind of hesitant to let me go, but I annoyed them so much, they finally let me walk over at the end of one of the practices, and I tried it once and I was just hooked.
Really? And that was it, just kind of love at first sight. And then as soon as you tried it, you knew that was going to be the sport for you.
Yes. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. And it's funny because the first time you do it, you're not gripping high, you're not bending the pole, you're not getting tossed into the air. So it's funny that I loved it so much with it almost just being like a long jump with a pole in your hand.
Okay.
Like
is jumping that right? Pit. Okay.
But it's just, you can tell. And I think a lot of people that do pole vault have the same first experience with it where they're like, this is so fun.
I can imagine. And up to 12 years old, you said that you were doing gymnastics. Did you feel at that point that gymnastics was kind of the hobby that you loved doing, or was there always something kind of missing and you knew it was never quite the right sport for you?
Yeah. So I actually did gymnastics only up until about 8 years old. Okay. I had done it for several years and was good enough to just do basic things like a back handspring. I had general flexibility, body strength, things like that. Competed a little bit, but it was so time consuming. And it's one of those sports that forces you to be all in. You can't do anything else. And I wanted to try every other sport on the planet. So for me, I gave it up because I wanted to try all these other sports. And so I feel like pole vault was kind of that perfect sport for me, because it gave me the things that I loved from gymnastics without being as crazy time consuming and intense.
And so when you convinced your coaches from school to let you go and try pole vault, can you remember that first session?
Vaguely. I remember walking up and there was one high school girl with a coach, because it was late in the day. The high school team always practiced before we got out there. Okay. And I remember walking over and the coach was like, do you want to try? And it was the high school coach. And I just said, yeah. And I don't really remember much of like the first jumps, but I just remember thinking, I want to do this all the time. I want to try this again and again.
So when you're describing it and he's talking about the pole not bending, I, in my head, I can just see you holding a broom without a broom end.
Basically.
And kind of jumping. And is that what it's about?
Basically, yes. It's longer because you are holding a pole vault pole, but there are different lengths and different stiffness. We call it flex.
Yeah.
And so it was a smaller pole, but I'm holding about halfway down. And so it's just, it's like a big long broomstick that you're just kind of holding in the middle. And it would be as if I went in my front yard and just started jumping over to the other side of it, kind of thing.
But I absolutely love that. And was it something that you kind of excelled at straight away? Was it something that you just took to, or was it?
Yes. Yeah, I would say that was probably part of why I loved it, was that I was also good at it. But I was somebody that I was good at it young, and I had always been good at it, but it always took me a few years to kind of achieve the top accolade, I guess. So in high school, the biggest meet that we had was the state championship, where you compete against everybody in the state. And it took me until my senior year of high school to win that meet. And then in college, it took me all 4 years to become national champion. And then when I got out of college, it took me, I think, 5 years to become US national champion. So I was always talented with it, but I had to learn how to work hard, and also I went through some bad mental blocks with it, and just how to navigate that and overcome those. And
it's a fantastic story. So you got into pole vault at 12 years old. You're natural at it. You know, you're absolutely loving the sport. Were your school happy for you to then start doing pole vaulting younger than what you should have been doing it? Because as you said, it went until high school.
Yeah, they were supportive. I think they didn't quite know probably how to coach it. But I was able to work in with the high school group, and they had had a girl try it the year before me in middle school. So I wasn't the absolute first girl, but I was one of the first girls in middle school to try. But they always had a coach. Like, I think the rule was that you had to have a coach there to practice or to compete. And they always had a coach that would come over and at least be there for safety purposes. And so, they, as soon as I started it and loved it and wanted to keep doing it and was having success with it, they did help that.
Did you then go and find an athletics club outside of school, or was it literally just the school who allowed you to do it and kind of nurtured that talent?
So not until high school. I think it was my sophomore year of high school. So my second year, 10th grade. So I was about 15 years old. And so that it was just a pole vault club though. So it wasn't a track and field club. It was about an hour away from me. And so we drove an hour each way twice a week, but it was a great club that had really knowledgeable coaches. And that's where I definitely made the biggest strides in improvement, was going to that club. I would say I definitely improved the most outside of my high school practices.
Okay.
High school practice was great, and it was obviously good that we had that, but the biggest pole vault improvements I made were outside of it.
And what did your parents sound like? They were really supportive of the fact that they're driving you 4 hours round trip every week. What did they think about when you're 12 year old and you went, you know, mom, dad, I've tried pole vaulting and I love it. I'm hooked.
They're the best parents. So supportive. And I think my mom was, of course, terrified for me because looks very unsafe. I will say when it's done well and you have good coaches, it's not that unsafe. And it's rare to have big crashes and things that people see a lot on YouTube. But, but my dad was actually the one that sought out that club, that pole vault club. Wow. And so he was always the one that any sport that I did, he got me in private lessons, and he knew I was athletic and he wanted me to succeed in whichever sport I chose. And it was kind of nice because he didn't know anything about it. So he couldn't try and coach me and tell me too much, which as a teenage girl, you never want your dad telling you what to do. So
don't say that. I've got three little girls.
I apologize in advance. And he actually, he passed away when I was 16. So he didn't get to see the majority of my career, but he set me up with a fantastic foundation and just like an emotional support that I carried with me throughout my career.
Wow. Oh no, that's really, really nice. What is it like? So you're starting off on a training pole, if we're going to call it a training pole. And then you get gradually start getting the bigger pole with more flex. What is it like when you take that first big jump?
I remember the first time I bent the pole, I was like, whoa, that was fun. But you work your way up to there. So it's a slow, as long as you have a good, knowledgeable coach that, you know, you just work your way up. So you start on really small, you know, shorter, softer poles and work your grip up to where you can jump. And you're gripping so high on it that it starts to bend naturally. So it doesn't bend a lot. It's not like you're having this huge pole in your hand and it bends and then it throws you off to the side. Doesn't happen very often. And so it's slow, but it's worth it because you build a consistency. And then as you start to raise your grip and you're getting on stiffer, longer poles, it's consistent and you land safely in the pit almost every time. But I remember the first time it was so much fun.
And is it kind of an adrenaline rush and an almost, oh my goodness, what's going to happen now?
Yeah, a little bit.
I can imagine.
I think that's why I dealt with some mental blocks throughout my career, because it's not a normal thing. It goes against a lot of your body's, you know, I don't know. You don't want to run full speed at a stationary object with just a pole in your hand. And I think as I got older and I started to realize what I was actually doing and then going to college where I had a new coach, making some changes, you start to realize it's a little scary actually. And so I've had to combat that. But, As long as you're working with a good coach and you make slow kind of changes, you work your way up to bending the pole. And
which part's scarier, the going up or the coming down?
I would say actually the scariest part is just, for me, it was in the few steps leading up to it. Because once I got off the ground and then in the fall, you know you're going to land safely. Yeah. It was more the irrational, what happens if I mess up as you're running full speed towards it? That's when usually I felt like was the scariest part. And that's, you know, where I struggled was telling myself, okay, you're good enough to get off the ground. Just trust yourself, trust your coach. And so, it's not as scary in the process of it because it happens so fast you know, as soon as you take off the ground, if it's going to be a good, safe jump, as soon as you take off the ground, it's like, yep, this is good.
It must be a funny sport though, because in a lot of sports, you can kind of bail out safely. You can't really bail out safely because you're going to be going the wrong way.
Actually, you can more than you would think. Because a lot of times, like I said, we know as soon as we take off the ground, if it's going to be bad. Yeah. And as long as it's easier said than done, but if you stay kind of patient, hold on, and then kind of like walk yourself down or know that you're over the pit or wherever, obviously things happen. If that's any sport.
Yeah.
You get good at bailing out. And obviously, things can happen, but usually you can kind of manipulate your body into the pit where you're going to land safely.
Oh, that's good. That's nice to know, because I always think once I'm going up, the pit's on the other side. And if I want to bail out, how do I even hit that? But obviously you said it's a process.
Yeah.
How to do that.
And again, things happen. Even the best athletes.
Oh, 1,000,000%.
You know, but
everybody.
Yeah.
Can we just talk about some of the titles you won when you were in high school? Because yeah. You say it was a kind of a progression where it was the last year of high school before you won.
Yes. So I qualified for the state championship, which, like I said, is there is a nationals in high school, but it's not as I think that the state meet is kind of the biggest one. Nationals is cool, but a lot of people can qualify and it's more voluntary. So a lot of people choose not to. I never went and I could have, but but the state meet, it's this, each state is broken up into different divisions. I was in the highest level division, which usually I think means like the most populated schools. I'm not exactly sure how those worked, but so I qualified for the state meet, which for us, you had to jump within you had to be top four at the district meet. And then those top four move on to regionals, and the top four from other districts came, and you had to be top four at regionals. And that's how you got to the state meet. And so it was basically the top 16, I think, that were at the state meet. And so my sophomore year, I qualified and I believe I tied for fifth. And then my junior year, I was runner up, and actually first place was those past 2 years was Kelsey Abbey, who was a Canadian pole vaulter. She grew up in the States, had dual citizenship, competed for Canada, and was an Olympic finalist in 2016.
Wow.
And she's now one of my best friends. But then my senior year, I won, she got second, and we've just had a good relationship since then. But
and do you think that the fact that you've got such a strong friendship and a really close rivalry kind of both pushed you on together?
Yes, it's the coolest sport in that I have made some of my absolute best friends doing it in being competitive. Even to this day, Holly Bradshaw, the English pole vaulter, she's probably one of my best pole vault friends, if not my best pole vault friend on the circuit. Like, she's wonderful. And it's just so cool because when it comes down to it, it's just you versus the bar. And what other people do truly has no direct impact on you and what you're capable of. And when you look at it from that perspective, as we're all just trying to jump as high as we can, and then you spend hours with them, you're rooming with them at meets, you're eating your meals with them, you're out at the competition for hours, you get to know these girls really well, and you create just genuine friendships. It's really fun.
That's really, really nice. It's a great story. And so you've come silver medalist, then you've won. What is it like to be able to say to family, friends, just anybody that you're meeting, yeah, I was state champion?
It was pretty awesome.
I can imagine.
But I was humbled very quickly because the next year I went to college and then really struggled. And I think part of that was I had worked so hard to become the best. And then you go to college, not even close to the best. And it's like, I think that added to the other things I was experiencing, being away from home, new coach. And it was just very humbling. And I was like, almost defeated a little bit. Like, I have to do this all over again. Like,
why do you think the jump was so big from high school level to collegiate level?
Well, my personal best wasn't, it did put me, I would say, in the top in college. It would have probably qualified me to some of the different things. I did qualify for NCAA nationals my freshman year after going through a lot that year, mental blocks and run through issues. But, I don't know. When you go to D1 college, it's just the best of the best. And a lot of them, you know, the top college girls are also the top girls, women in the United States.
Okay.
Back in 2016, one of the girls that made the Olympic team was still in college. And so I would say D1 NCAA's is almost as competitive, if not as competitive as, if not just as competitive as U.S. nationals and the best U.S. athletes. And you'll see a lot of college athletes that are competing in world championships and in Olympic games and things like that. So,
and there's such a big, there's the, it's huge over there, the NCAA is in the States, isn't it?
Yeah, it's big.
everyone I've spoke to from America has kind of all mentioned the NCAAs. Even people who have just traveled from Europe to go to America to go to college, they go to university, they all mention this, and it's just, it's
that's the crazy. Next step.
Yeah.
And that's just the progression. If you are good enough in high school to then compete in college, that's the next step. And then occasionally you get people out of high school that are good enough to compete at the professional level, but that's rare. Usually you need that college phase to build and hone your craft, if you will. But then you also get the education and you learn how to live on your own and you get all of that as well.
And do you think the step up is just huge because you've also got international athletes coming over as well?
That's definitely part of it. Yes. And it's just, it's everyone that wasn't a good athlete in high school then goes there. And so it just becomes more competitive because,
of course.
And you know, it was just me in my state. It was just me in the state of Ohio. And then you go on to the NCAA and it's all the state champions in every division. And, you know, and so.
And do you start seeing a trend in which states tend to be, I'm going to say better. I don't know if that's the right word, but when you get there, just for you seeing the step up was just huge. I'm just trying to wonder why it was so huge when you're the best in your state. Was there a difference between the way you're being coached in your state to the way someone else is being coached?
No, and actually I would say Ohio is a very competitive, or is a relatively competitive state in terms of turning out elite athletes. I think I just made it out to be bigger in my head. But you do tend to see, you know, states like California, Texas, some of the southern states where it's warm all year. But as a whole, like, no, I wouldn't say there are any in particular that stand out. And it's weird because Ohio, half the season, it's snowy for us. So it's kind of shocking that we produce as many good athletes as we do. But I think I would say it's a relatively even playing field. Granted, I would have to go look at some of the stats on that.
No, I just thought I believe you. We'll take it as gospel truth.
Okay.
No, that's fantastic. So you've got to college. You've had a lot of things going on in your life, even if it's just mental blocks with training the way you're. When was the breakthrough?
I would say it was my senior year. I struggled for the first 3 years. And I actually ended up transferring schools to a Division II school, which is technically, by all accounts, not as competitive.
Okay.
So D1 is the highest level you can go to, and you have to be jumping high enough, running fast enough. D2 is a little more laid back. Athletes that really want to compete in college, maybe not good enough for D1, or just athletes that don't want the pressure of D1, tend to go D2. And so you'll occasionally get phenomenal athletes out of Division II, but typically the times and the heights maybe aren't as competitive as Division I. And so I actually transferred there because I just got a really good feeling from the coach back when I was being recruited to schools in high school. And I had friends there. They had a brand new stadium. And I was really struggling at the first school that I went to, the University of Dayton. And I just said, I need a change. It's not happening here.
Yeah.
My coach ended up leaving. And so I was like, this is it. This is my exit. And so I transferred to a Division II school. And my junior year, so my third year in school, was kind of a rebuilding. I was just getting that confidence back. We were on really small poles, really short approach, just back to basics, just building that confidence back up. And then by my senior year, I wanted to jump higher than I was afraid of it. And so that was kind of that breakthrough moment of, okay, we can actually run from a farther approach, which gives you more speed, which more speed means you can get on bigger poles that are going to toss you higher. And so it was a process, but then my senior year, I jumped a PR of in metric. I want to say it was 45 centimeter PR. Right. And that just, I'm sure from an outside perspective, it looked ridiculous, but I think people that knew me and kind of knew my story was like, yep, that makes sense. Yeah. So yeah.
45 centimeters is a big jump. Yeah. Yeah, it's half a meter, Nelly, isn't it? So it's a big amount of space to me.
I think that goes to show, because that personal best was set when I was in high school. And for those next 3 years, I just really struggled. So I don't think it would have been that big of a jump had I just had a natural progression. But
yeah, of course,
it is what it is.
And everyone has their own journey, and you have to take it. And you have to do, you know, the fact that people might be listening to this and thinking, and because I know I'm sitting listening thinking, wow, that's a very big thing to do. It's a bold step to step down from a D1 to Division 2.
Yeah.
But especially when you're aspiring to be a pole vaulter.
Yeah. That's the good thing about track and field being an individual sport, though. Yeah. It doesn't matter what division. That's what I try to tell kids when they're looking for schools, when they're being recruited. A lot of people get blinded by D1. Everyone wants to go D1.
I can imagine.
And I get it. I did too. But I just tell them, go where your gut is telling you to go and really vibe with the coach, because they're the reason you're going to succeed. They're the reason you're going to love it or hate it. Like, and so I just try to tell people, it's, you know, you don't have to go D1 to be successful.
I suppose when it comes to pole vault as well, regardless of in Division 1 or Division 2, you still have the opportunity to jump the same height, because it's just you against, as you said, against the bar.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the same implements. It's the same everything. And so that's why I think in track and field, especially, you do see a lot more athletes that are successful at the elite level from Division 2, from Division 3, because it's not, it's an individual sport, and it's the same at any level. So
No, that's great. So you've hit that peak in your senior year, and you've now became more than a state champion. Have you become a national collegiate champion?
Yes. So that year I was indoor and outdoor Division 2 national champion, and actually set the Division 2 national record. Wow. And then got out, and it was a height that, so 444, I think, was what I ended up jumping at the end of my senior year. Wow. That was a height that was competitive, and it got me to US nationals. Wow. But I placed my first US nationals, I want to say I was maybe sixth, seventh, maybe fifth, somewhere in there, in the middle of the pack, basically. Yeah, yeah. So I did well enough to say, okay, I can hold my own.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, it took me years to then be at the top and win US Nationals. So,
and what was that like when you finally got to the top and you were the best in the whole country?
Pretty incredible. That jump, that meet, changed my life, because I went from being a good pole vaulter, respectively. I had improved my personal best. At that time, it was 4 meters 76. And I went into that meet ranked third, and the top two qualify for the world championships.
Wow.
And I knew I was ready to jump high, but it was a matter of just going in. And I, at the time, wasn't signed by a shoe company. So I didn't have like a source of income other than prize money. I was still technically living off my mother. She was wonderfully supportive. And that meet, in winning it and jumping 491,
wow,
I jumped several PRs in that meet, qualifying for the team, signed me with Nike, and it just changed everything. So it was pretty incredible.
It is absolutely phenomenal story. What is it like when you realize you're now the best in the whole of the country, and you've came your own way, you've come took your own journey, you know, and then all of a sudden you're now the best in the US, and Nike have just said, look, Katie, we want to sign you up.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. And it was cool. I got to attempt the indoor world record at that meet, and it was very surreal. I remember when I cleared 470 for the first time, that was a big barrier, and I cried. And with this meet, I was like so in shock. I couldn't even cry. It was like, what just happened? Like it was crazy, because it just, usually you have time to, like, I went for that 480 bar. That was the next big barrier so many times. And then to clear that and the next one, it was just, I almost couldn't process it. It was unbelievable.
And why did that day things just went so well? Was there anything that stands out, or was it just one of those days that an athlete has where everything goes right?
It was that, but it was the accumulation of everything that we had been working on. I had worked with a coach for the first few years out of college, basically up until 2016. So from 2013 to 2016, I worked with one coach, and he was great. But it just wasn't quite the right fit for me at that time. And that was up until the trials. At the trials, I tied for fifth. So I didn't make the team. You have to be top three. And I had a really good day. I, at that time, set a new outdoor personal best. And up until that point, anytime I had a great day, I tended to get what I wanted, in a way. I don't mean to sound, you know, conceited. It just, if I had a good day, it was very hard to beat me. And on that day, I had a great day and didn't make the team. And in that moment, it was like, okay, I need a new situation. I need a new coach. I know I can jump higher, but I'm just not going to be able to do it with what I'm doing now. Of course. And so I moved out to work with my current coach in the spring of 2017.
Okay.
And so just working with him, we really tackled my mental game and finally really kind of conquered those mental things, which then allowed me to change things technically that I had never been able to do. And so it was just an accumulation of that. And so I knew it was coming, but to have it all happen on that day at the national championships, like, it was just pretty incredible.
To see you're the best in the country, Nike then sign you up. what does it mean when, how does it change your life when Nike get in touch and say, okay, we know you're the best in the country now, we want to sign you. You're never going to pay for another pair of trainers.
That is, I still cry every time I get a shipment from them. But it's just the coolest feeling, because it was worth it. It was all worth it. And for 5 years, my mom was helping me pay bills, and then to become financially independent. And that's all I wanted. This is a sport where you're never going to become a millionaire off of being a pole vaulter. But if I could just support myself doing it, and that's all I wanted. And so to have that happen, it was just so great. And to know that a company believed in me, to invest in me, to sign me, like, it was pretty indescribable.
Yeah, it's not just any
company. It's not the biggest dream you can have.
Yeah, it's not just any company. It's probably one of the biggest sporting brands on the globe.
Right. It's definitely the dream to always sign with Nike. So pretty incredible.
That is absolutely phenomenal. So you've qualified as the best person in the US and qualified for the World Championships. What was it like going? Was this your first World Championships as well?
Yes, it was my first World Championships. It wasn't the first time I had competed internationally, but it was my first Worlds, and it was actually in England. It was in 2018, and I love competing in England. The crowd there is unbelievable, and I did okay. I didn't have the best day. I think I was fifth, and so I was a little disappointed, because I had just come off of, I jumped that height at the nationals, and then the next meet I backed it up with another you know, 486, I think I jumped. Right. And so coming in, I was like, okay, let's do this. And it brought me back down to earth a little bit. Like, okay, you're not perfect yet. Like, no. You still have to keep working. And so, yeah, since then, I have just consistently jumped very well, but I qualified for outdoor worlds as well. But again, I think I tied for seventh at that meet. So I keep having these situations where I'm working hard, I'm jumping well, but I still have things that I want to achieve and, you know, little setbacks, if you will.
And I suppose when you're at your level, it's being so elite, the difference between a fifth or a seventh place finish in the world is probably only a couple of centimeters or a minor technical issue.
Right. And it was a great meet. So it was in Doha in 2019. And my last attempt to stay in the competition, I went to the biggest pole I've ever been on, the stiffest pole, because that's just what I needed. And because it was a great runway, you have a lot of adrenaline. And I was so high in the air. I was several feet, like we're talking, I don't know, 20, 30 centimeters. I mean, I was way high in the air and I just brushed it on the backside and the bar wiggled and then fell. And it's just one of those things where it's just the littlest thing where I was so high in the air, but it just didn't stay. And that was devastating. I was so upset, but it was so motivating. And so as frustrating as those moments are, and there's a picture of me sitting on the bench with my face, just like, you can tell I'm just sobbing. My face is just the saddest look on it, just sitting all by myself after I had gone out. But I'm so happy I have that picture, because I know that just means I want it that bad. And it keeps me motivated for, you know, next year. And this past year, I set a new all-time personal best, even with COVID and everything going on. So it just, good things are still happening, and it's definitely pushing me forward. But it keeps me humble. Like,
yeah, 100%.
You have not figured it out yet. Like, there's a lot more you need to accomplish in the sport.
Yeah. And do you think that the break from due to COVID has helped your development?
Actually, yes. I was bummed when they announced the postponement of the Olympics, but in hindsight, it's the best thing that could have happened to my jump, because it gave me so much time to just work on technique. And that was time that I wouldn't have had otherwise. Every preseason that I've had with my coach, where I've just had months to work on the technique, it's gotten better and better. And so it was as if we just had this giant long preseason with months of training and working on the technical things. And so I don't think it's a fluke that I then set an all-time personal best this past summer. I'm definitely excited, but
is that the new training goal is now just totally for the Olympics in 2021, fingers crossed it goes ahead.
Yes. That's always the goal, right? As an Olympic
the pinnacle of your sport
athlete, that's it. That's the biggest goal you could ever have. And
would you rather be an Olympic champion or a world champion?
Olympic.
Okay. Why?
Yeah. The Olympics just has more prestige to it. It's every 4 years instead of every 2 years. And world champion is still incredible. I would gladly take that.
Yeah.
But to say you're an Olympic champion, that's something that very, very few people can say. And that would definitely be, that's the ultimate dream, right?
I totally understand. I've spoken to quite a few Olympians now, actually.
That's awesome.
And I was talking to Liz McColgan, Eilish McColgan's mom.
Yes.
And I was talking, because I did a podcast episode with Liz, and she was saying that, you know, for all the world championships she won in the marathons, she was devastated when she got a silver medal at the Olympics.
Yeah, which is just unbelievable.
But I love hearing that as well, because I think some people lose sight that athletes are there to win. They're not there to get bronze and silver medals. Yeah. Yes, I'm sure when they reflect on that later on in life, they're very proud of the fact that they get a bronze or a silver medal.
Yeah.
But that is not the reason that people enter competitions.
Right. And usually the people that can medal can win.
Yeah.
And so then when you don't, you know, with what we do, we work so hard to win. And so when you don't win, you feel like a failure, even though in retrospect, it's like, wait, I'm a medalist at the Olympics. Like, yeah. I'd gladly take that. Yeah. But that's the reason that those athletes are as phenomenal as they are, yeah. because they have that win at all costs mentality. And when they don't, they still achieve something incredible, but they're not satisfied, and yeah. that, and they work harder to then be better.
Yeah, definitely. So. Well, I'm conscious of the time, but I've got a couple of last things.
You're good.
What would be your advice to any young person or anyone who would like to follow in your shoes, or just someone who's aspiring to be successful at something?
I would say, first of all, just have fun with it, because when you're young and when you're just starting something, that's where your base love of it comes from. And when I have terrible days, I know how much I love what I do. So just make sure that you're always loving it, especially at a young age. But also, something I wish that I had learned or done myself when I was younger was, when I was practicing, just be a little more intentional in my focus and what I'm trying to do. I would just run down and throw my hands up and just, woo, I'm flying, like, yay. Yeah. And that's great. And that was fun. But then when I went through that really bad mental block, I couldn't go back to anything that I had focused on. Yeah. And now I know how to think on the runway and how to try and execute things. And so I wish when I was younger, I'd just maybe not been so scatterbrained when I was doing it. Just a little more intentional with it, but still fun. You don't want to hyper focus when you're young, but yeah, those are the two things I would say.
That's amazing. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. And
yeah,
I think if you're up for it, we should definitely do a follow-up after the Olympics, regardless of the outcome. I would love to chat to you again about that journey.
Absolutely. Yes. 100%.
That would be amazing. Thank you awesome. So much. Katie, thank you so much for your time and coming on Hobby of a Lifestyle. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Hobby of a Lifestyle. Stay safe, stay well, and we'll see you next time.